I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Jason Yule joins us. Jason, this is as big an introduction as anyone ever gets. But Jason, and it just give you a little distraction as you work your way through a busy day, I'm sure. Inside all toilet rolls, there are numbers printed. Inside okay. every single one of them. And yet no explanation forthcoming. Sometimes in kitchen roll. But and if people want to send us the numbers, we'll see if it may add up to some kind of binary code that says, I'm a prisoner in a toilet roll factory, get me out of here. We don't know. Jason Yule, as I say, joins us. Happy FA Cup final day, Jason.
Thank you.
Jason, what was the first medal you ever won? How old were you and who presented it to you?
I can't remember the age I was when I actually won my first one, but I can always remember when I was 16, I won the old Metropolitan Five-a-Side tournament.
Did you?
Used to happen, yeah.
And they great day. Five-a-side tournaments yeah. are great days.
And
you
had the final at Wembley Arena, and Andy Impey actually handed me that one. And I always remember sort of that specific medal.
But you must have won plenty of medals before that.
Oh, yeah, loads before, but I can't remember any sort of famous or...
It doesn't...
It's just like secretaries of the leagues and or your clubs, normally.
Headmasters and things like this. And we had Eddie Fermani, who was assistant manager at Charlton once, and we thought that was like the Queen had turned up. Wow! That was a five-a-side tournament. Do you not still keep your earliest?
I have. I've got some in the loft. My mum's got some with her back in Barbados as well, so they're sort of spread around at the moment, but they're there.
And was it only football you won for? Were you a good runner? Or anything
cricket.
Else.
I've got
Did
a few
you?
For cricket, athletics during school time, the odd table tennis from youth club days.
Wow.
That was sort of the main medals I won, really.
We'll move on to something else in a second. But did they come engraved, or did you have to get them engraved? Because believe it or not, I've got about 12 medals from before I was 15. Some my old man bothered to have engraved, and others I think, well, what was that for?
Some were either blank, or it was runners-up, winners.
They were like generically engraved, weren't they? Just first place, second, or...
And as a, somebody who's won a fair share of honours in your time, what do you do with, like, runners-up medals? Do they actually go on display? What happens with runners-up
medals? I think you've still got to be proud of what you won, yeah. I think a lot of people know it's all about winning, but then it's being part of an occasion as well, and I think you still got to remember that. Yeah,
the gold ones are on the top shelf, though, right?
They're all out. They're all out.
Well, it's very big of you. I wouldn't have thought that. Apparently, the cup final's on again today. It used to be a much bigger affair. I know everyone says, and for pros and all of that, but just for the rank and file, I miss Frank Boff with his big umbrella and the build-up and all of that.
What do you think about not being on like the last day of the season?
I miss it.
Yeah,
because I remember when I was growing up, it was getting up round about now for the whole build-up of the coach coming to the hotel to pick up the players, and then you've got the fans outside, and then the helicopters following
both
coaches. It's like a royal wedding.
Yeah. Following both coaches from the hotels along... Yeah.
Of course, you know what it was, Jason, as well. It was the idea that football, or certainly sport, was on at a time it wasn't normally on. Now, of course, there's 25 billion channels. Thanks a lot, BT. we've got about 25 billion channels doing it. But then it was, football's on at a time when it shouldn't be. It was exciting.
It was a whole day affair. Yeah. The FA Cup, and that was the thing. You get off your breakfast, and that is it. Till
live football
5 o'clock.
On television.
Yeah, till 5 o'clock, that was what you was doing.
Yeah, it is a live football on television. Extraordinary. Let me jump from subject to subject here. You're deaf in one ear, right? I've got, since I was ill, I've got terrible tinnitus. You're deaf in one ear.
That's right,
Properly deaf.
Yeah, from the age of 9, I remember in my playground at school. I'm not going to say his name. I always remember his name.
Yeah.
And he just shouted in my ear really, really loud.
No!
And from there, I just started getting headaches and problems through the right ear, and had many a test and just couldn't really do anything from
it. Just shouting?
Just shouted in my ear really, really loud, and that was
grief.
It.
Well, now I feel bad about it. My Colin, who used to stand in front of me at Millwall, I had one of them, not given to taking things into football grounds normally, but one of those hooters they have on yachts. And I did it right into his ear. Now I realise that might have been a bad thing to do.
Probably.
and does it affect you in any way? Because it's all about balance and all of that.
No, I've been fine from it. It's actually proved to be a positive as well when you're playing on a certain side of where your manager is.
You can ignore the grief that you're getting from the touchline.
But I've I've never seen it as a negative in any way. I've had it for such a long time. Yeah. And I've got used to it. It does affect me sometimes socially if you're out in people talking. But other than that, I've managed to continue my life as normal.
But like right now, so you're just hearing this in one side.
Well, yeah,
it's completely gone the other one, is it?
Who was the worst manager for that? That you played under for like?
Oh, Joe Kinnear. Joe was the worst for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even at times you can hear it from the other side, but. Once she knew you were standing on his side, that's the one you think, yes, I can just get
well, I can block it out.
Yeah. Dear old Harry Redknapp, it's hard enough to understand what Harry's saying at the time. Think of the Jason Yules of this world. When you went international, when you started playing for the old country, so to speak, what's it like the first time you played? Where was the first game you played for Jamaica? Where was that?
It was away to America. We played
in the States.
Columbus. It was.
What happens then? They send air tickets through, and you get this itinerary. What happens the very first time you got to join a team?
It took me about 4 months to get my clearance started. Mm-hmm. So we had qualified the sort of pre-qualifying stage for the World Cup at that time. It would have been for 2006. So I went over in 2004, started it from then, and it literally, the last group stage in November is when my paperwork come through. So I'd been over in the August and September breaks, hoping that my paperwork was all sorted and finalised, hadn't, and I actually managed to play that last game for 20 minutes. We ended up drawing against the US.
But the physically getting there, Jason, that's the thing. You know, we see it on TV and we think all happens like clockwork. I mean, who gets in touch with you? And are you looked after like a school child, almost?
Practically, yeah. I mean, we get the email comes through from the JFF to the club. I was at Charlton at the time. And then it's you meet up with the rest of the boys at the airport on a Sunday morning. You get flown over in business class,
wow.
You get picked up at the airport, and yeah, you do get looked after.
And you're trying to say, well, this is the business I'm in, but you must be thinking, yes, this is why I used to knock off school early and do all of that out. It must feel terrific.
Yeah, because you think that you've earned it as well, because all the hard work that you've put into your career. Not
come on
just
now,
from,
earned it. There are people driving buses out there, Jason.
Yeah, but it is a lot of hard work to get to where we get to. Yeah. And I think some people don't realise that. It is a lot of hard work.
And you're telling me you didn't text your mate saying, I'm in business class, I'm all the way to the States. Tough luck, suckers. Better luck next time.
We're going that far. But it's not. But it's... No, you enjoy it and you savour those moments. And even I played for Jamaica 3 times and one was abroad. But you know, they're moments you savour.
Yeah,
you feel you are a bit above everyone else when you're sort
so
of flying
you should
in
be.
Business.
Well done.
But it's what the JFF
soak
wanted to get
up.
You there for.
Yeah.
For there, it was cheaper for them to do it by business anyway. But no, I enjoyed it.
And the actual, forgive me, but this is the sort of stuff that I'm never going to know about unless I ask a person who's played at international level. Is it basically the same routine during the game? At a halftime, talk's still pretty much the same. If you shut your eyes, could you be taking part in a league game, or is there a vibe about it? You think, no, this is a really big stage.
It's the same.
Yeah.
It is the same.
Not a special reggae boys vibe.
No. No, you get your moment where you get your chill out, and then all of a sudden it is party time before you go back out, because we saw it was always this work. At half time, it's chill.
Yeah,
as soon
as
you have your chat, you're back out. That's work time. And that's what it was. Sort of 5 minutes before we went back out, it was right, music back on. Let's go and do the business.
And do you have to think about what you're going to do during a national anthem? Do you think, well, I'm going to sing it lustily, or I'm miles away, or you just think, let's get it over with?
I mean, no, I was chest out and taking in the atmosphere and the surroundings, thinking, as I said before, this is work time and this is what you want to be doing.
Yeah. And you must be aware that a camera's going along saying, singing, singing, not singing, not singing, singing, as we all do.
You're either a singer or a starer.
A starer, or, you know, I'm in the zone, i.e. it's like being in church and you just don't want to do it. And what was your record over the games you played? Did you win more than you lost, or lost more than you won?
Drew one and lost two. And the third one was that 6-0 defeat to England at Old Trafford.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That one.
Did anyone say anything? You can go up the tunnel.
No.
Oh, of course it was.
Yeah.
Oh, that was rotten, though, because you see a lot of people, you know, family and all that in the stands, and, you know, it's virtually a home fixture for everyone.
It was. It was a massive occasion for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think we went into it a little bit too of the occasion rather than try and play the game and do as well as we can. I think the majority of the players just sort of got a little bit overawed with the atmosphere. But, again, it's an experience.
Yeah.
All right. take away the scoreline, but the experience is, well, we played against England at Old Trafford and...
Exactly. Yeah. You know, talk about your business class and all of that. And Jason, you're well done, because it doesn't matter if you play at Togo against the Philippines. I don't know if there is such a fixture. You're an international footballer and you played at Man... You played for Jamaica against England. That's a win all round. I like making people feel good because he's done it. The rest of us have just got our noses pressed against the window. We'll be right back.
Saturday mornings with Danny Baker on 5 Live. Available now in sound and vision at bbc.co.uk/5live.
Jason, you're good enough to join us as I bombard him with big, dumb questions about what it's like to be a footballer. There's too much presumption, I think, amongst a lot of people in my profession that they're part of the game. You're not. You're either a footballer or you're not. So let's ask some big, dumb questions, and Jason, you're in a perfect place to answer these. Pay packets. Do you remember your first pay packet as a professional footballer?
It was July 95... Just signed pro at Wimbledon, and I was on £220 a week, I think it was.
Did you stare at that a long time, thinking they're paying me for doing this, or did it seem like a natural process?
No, it's like, wow, this is the first pro contract wage packet.
And how much of that did you have to give for keep and board?
Oh, to mum.
Yeah, exactly. How much of that? Fiver? Yeah, mum. Give me a bottle of salt.
I used to give mum at least about a week of that. I used to give mum. That was sort of my bed and board and everything else. So, £225, I think it was a week.
And how much fun were you having at Wimbledon at that time? How crazy was it?
Wasn't so much socially at 18, sort of, going out all the time with the money that was on, but just generally around the whole club was just unreal. I mean, I got involved there on a full-time basis when I was 16, so I was in amongst everything. Yeah. And to the point when I left at 24, it was non-stop from the first day to the last day I left. And there, you talk about things you savour and memories, that is one of them.
It couldn't happen again, could it? You couldn't get a club with a reputation for being wild.
No,
it's just simply
it just wouldn't be allowed.
It'd be shut down in a second.
Yeah, and even now people still ask me, well, what was it like at Wimbledon? And I'd tell them, no, that didn't happen, did it? It was like, well, yeah, that was like the norm. Yeah. That was an everyday thing. And people now just generally don't believe the things that happened at a football club.
But now you're at Charlton on the other side of it, on the staff side of it.
Yeah.
Can't they turn around and go, well, you can't talk, I've read about you.
But at least I can say, whatever you're trying to do, I've done it better. So I can't contradict it.
I mean, it's obviously different being on the staff side as opposed to the playing side. What's the biggest change you have to get used to? Do you still look at the youngsters even and think, that's where I want to be?
Yeah, of course. And even up to now, I'm lucky enough that I'm in full-time every day and I see the boys that I was playing with last season. So it's when I sort of come in or they're leaving, I'm like, look at you half-dayers. Yeah. I'm thinking, well, I've been doing that for over 20 years. All of a sudden, I'm doing the longer shifts, doing the paperwork. But for me, I made the choice of wanting to go into coaching earlier than probably what I'd expected to, because the opportunity was there. But I'm enjoying every minute of it, and it is seeing the kids there, and it's being able to coach them and given the life experiences as well, let them know what I've been through and what's ahead of them.
But it must also, for your own well-being, it must be a footballer suddenly cut off from football to not be in football anymore. That first Monday morning, you must just think, because everything has been taken care of and suddenly you're outside of it. Now, that must be a terrifying prospect, which you saw coming.
Well, that was always something that I've looked at if I didn't have that next thing in front of me.
Yeah.
But I said I was lucky enough to have the opportunity from when I finished playing to go straight into it, and being around it every day, I've not really lost the football environment. And I know there's been a lot of players that have found it hard when they've stepped right
of
away
course,
from
yeah,
football.
Torres, littered with it.
So for me, I mean, I've said I had the opportunity, I've took it, and I'm grasping it of I'm still involved in it, and I want to, the time I'm involved in it, hopefully it's a long time in that.
Yeah.
I want to give out as much as I can from what I learned from it.
Let's talk about being transferred. How much control does a player have over that? And again, what's the nuts and bolts of it from the very first moment that either you make the decision or a manager makes the decision? Do you have to hang around indoors until the phone goes and say, it's done? And then what happens?
Sometimes you can be in transit. That's the thing, because the clubs might have started talking, but they haven't agreed a fee. But it could be, right, you start going to get processed. They still got your medical, things like that, while they continue agreeing. They'll agree a fee. You've done your medical. The agents have spoken to the club. You've arranged how much you're going to be on, the length of the contract. You'll get to a training ground or the stadium, and then you're signed. But at times it can be...
But personally, I mean, because if you're in a relationship or, you know, you're near your family, when's the moment you walk around and say, listen, I'm...
We're moving.
Luckily, I mean, my first one was from Wimbledon to Charlton, so there was no move. So it was quite handy. There was no move involved in that. But from the...
No, to Middlesbrough.
To Charlton to Middlesbrough, that was the one, because... that happened so quick, and that was all on transfer deadline day. I mean, got the call on the Tuesday night it was. The Wednesday, I flew up to.
You had an inkling, surely, before it, but you didn't know where you were going?
No, it was just a Tuesday night. It was, Middlesbrough were interested, you can go. I was like, okay, I can go. But it's just not that simple, as you said. Well, what do we do? So it was, had a chat, all right, I'll go Wednesday morning. Flew up the Wednesday. Stayed overnight, and from then the whole Thursday was just manic, because it was myself, Jonathan Woodgate and Robert Hoof all being done at the same time, so this trying to juggle three transfers at once. And
you must have like a million questions that you think, well, this is not the time for it, but when does the point come where you say, where am I going to be living? Where am I? do you take care of that, or does somebody else do it?
It was, they actually had a player liaison officer at Middlesbrough at the time, so as soon as you got there, it was right, this is where you're going to be for the first couple of months if you don't find somewhere. We've got all the agents. We've got the places where you can rent, where you can buy. So it was all there.
Does if you're in a relationship, your partner do it, or does it?
Myself, because at the time when I was in a hotel, it just kept me active of going and visiting the places that I wanted to go and live, or to go view to buy things like that. So it was keeping me occupied as much as it was still there for the football. But from even when I came up on the Thursday, our first game was the Arsenal away at the Emirates. So it was, went up by the Thursday, trained the Friday, and then I flew back down south on the Friday morning sort of thing.
And do you take all your stuff, or do the footballers have things in storage all over the place?
I just had literally just an overnight bag with my boots and everything like that, a couple clothes, wash bag as you do, and then it was sort of up, and you get your club tracksuit, and it was back down, and then sort of home for the weekend, and suitcase, car, back up the motorway.
It must be, even though you know these clubs from playing at them, the first day you turn up is like any new job or new... Where is the canteen?
You're the new boy at school. Yeah, you're the new boy at school. That's it. And it's lucky enough that there were a couple of players there that I knew, so it was a little bit easier to be sort of welcomed. Mm-hmm. And
that must help, but going to a club where you know no one, I know it's a fraternity of footballers, but it isn't any different, I take it, like say from the first day at school,
but they said when Ray Parler was there when I joined, so it sort of made it easy that there was another southern boy up north, which
they mark your card
that's great. But they said it was an easier transition because there were a lot of young players at the time coming through, and they're all obsessed about London. What's it really like living in London? Is London great?
Really?
I want to come down to London. I want to have an overnight. I'm thinking...
Where is it cut off up north?
That's the Chelsea effect, you know, clubs that stay open and that. But and so you've settled in at a club. Going back to the other point about actually being transferred, can players be transferred against their will? I know it sounds dumb, but... It can do. That must be nerd. Have you happened to you?
It hasn't, no. But it can happen because you said the powers that be upstairs, they're the ones...
Well, it happened to Andy Carroll, didn't it? He didn't... It was the money was so much that Newcastle were going to take the money, whatever. And he said, you know, he didn't really want to go.
Uh-huh. But they wouldn't have managed so much again. I think that they're probably soothed as a little of that. And you've got a whole team, I take it. You did have a whole team of agents and stuff all working for you.
Yeah, it's one, really. Just one agent that was dealing with it at the time. And I think it's easier to deal with one than probably having a team around.
Yeah.
I think some of the bigger players might have teams because... probably too lazy to go and do stuff themselves, but for me it was just one person, which I know that it's one middle person as a contact and things can get done.
They get a real hard time, agents, and everyone says ruin the game and stuff, but if it's anything like this business, they can be mates of yours and all of that. I mean, do you have a pretty good relationship? Would you defend agents?
Yeah, no, I've the agents that I've worked with, I've had good relationships with them, and I think that's what's important with an agent, that they're there for you and you only. Okay, they might have other players, but if they're giving you that time and looking out for your interests and your well-being, I think that's the only way that you can move forward with an agent.
Well, about your relationships with your managers? Because the ones you've played under, some of the real characters, aren't they? Like Joel Kinnear, you already mentioned, Alan Kirbishley, Ian Holloway.
Egil Olsen. That was a really straight. I think everyone sort of knew he was the Willetton boots wearing guy. And in every season, even when he came out training trainers, we were like, whoa, like, what's happened here, sort of thing. But that was a strange transition for the club at the time, when we sort of started playing a different way. We started bringing in more of the Scandinavian players that fitted into the way we wanted to play, but the transition just didn't help us as a club at that time.
Now, it must be, like you mentioned, the school motif. It is a bit of a new headmaster sort of thing, and you know, you're the pupils, and it's tougher that it becomes, yeah. Right, instead of doing this, we're going to be doing this, and you all nudge each other and go, here we go. It must be.
It was a little bit like that, not too in your face, though, but it was a little bit.
And Abbott being full on, I don't know, the coaching stuff is full time for you, but how far away is it from you being a manager?
That can happen any time. It's one of those things where a phone call can happen. You just don't know.
Your neighbours just across London, just across South East London, are currently hiring, I understand.
No, it can happen any time, but it's if you're ready for that challenge. And at the moment, I don't feel I'm ready for that challenge. I've only been doing it for a year on a full-time basis.
You must be gagging for it. If the phone calls when you get in and says, hey, Sheffield United fan, do you fancy it?
No, for me, I'm happy doing it at this level. I'm getting the experience of doing the coaching. Sometimes when you make that step up to a first team reserves, you're not coaching every day. You're sometimes standing on the sidelines just conducting, but I'm physically coaching and getting the experience that I'm needed. And I feel probably 2 years, maybe 3 years, seeing how things go, if I feel ready for that challenge, then I'll probably accept it.
I bet you will. Grab it with both hands. And you'll be good at it, because I suppose you retain all the phrases you've heard.
Oh, yeah. Good and bad.
Exactly that.
Which of those managers would you be most like? Which one sort of influenced you most in your coaching style?
I've taken a bit of every manager I've played under.
That's a real eclectic mix.
Yeah, not just as a coach, but I've taken bits from them which they've helped me in my game. And I've used that now as part of the coaching as well.
It's very useful for us, and the information you give all adds up to, I hope, to a kind of a what it might be like to actually be a footballer that people dream of. One last thing, especially about managers, do they ever admit culpability? Do managers actually say, sorry about it, boys, that was my fault? Because we always hear the other way. If you know managers say, yeah, I'm sorry, them changes I made, that was all my fault. Do they say that?
I've heard Joe has said that a couple of times.
Joe Wood?
Yeah, a couple of times he said that. And Ian Holloway's actually said that before as well.
Has he?
He said it a few times. Maybe I got it wrong today.
That's such a good thing for a manager to actually say out to some games, and, boys, wasn't your fault, that was mine.
Yeah, and it's not sometimes always down to our performance. It's just in the way that he might have asked us just to play something
exactly.
A little bit different to what we're used to. And it's... that didn't work. I'm going to go back to what we know, which we've been working at every day. So,
well, Jason, if nothing else over this last very fast half hour, you've let us in that sometimes managers get things wrong. Who'd have thought? Jason Yule, thank you very much indeed.
No problem.
Wigan got no chance of that.
They have. It's FA Cup day. Anything can happen.
I'll ask you off the air again then.